Earth Sky.
Welcome to Earth Sky 22, 22 minutes of science, interviews, and great music from Austin, Texas. I'm Jorge Salazar. This week, ripples of dark matter reflected at the outskirts of galaxies. And a favorite for sky watchers, the stars of Orion's belt. Here's a scientist's soundbite.
The hunt for dark matter has a lot in common with the hunt for planets back in the 1800s. So there's a lot of potential to understand dark matter from its effects on other things, from its gravitational effects.
That's astrophysicist Sukanya Chakrabarty of Florida Atlantic University. More with her later, but first, science news of the week with Emily Howard and Michael Brennan.
Astronomers say there might be 100 billion planets in our Milky Way galaxy. If they're right, it means there is at least one planet for every star in the Milky Way on average. It means that there should be at least 1,500 planets within just 50 light years of Earth. This news comes from a statistical study by an international team of astronomers based on 6 years of surveying stars in our home galaxy. Their results were published in the January 11th issue of the journal Nature.
On January 10th, a powerful 7.3 magnitude earthquake struck off the coast of northern Sumatra, Indonesia, prompting officials to issue a brief tsunami warning. A tsunami did not occur, and there were no immediate reports of injury or building damage. In 2004, an undersea earthquake off the west coast of Sumatra triggered a series of devastating tsunamis along the coasts bordering the Indian Ocean. The 2004 tsunami killed over 230,000 people in 14 countries and inundated coastal communities with waves up to 30 meters, nearly 100 feet, high. The 2004 Indian Ocean tsunami is now known as one of the deadliest natural disasters in recorded history.
Astronomers announced the most distant galaxy cluster to date at this year's winter meeting of the American Astronomical Society, held January 9th through 12th in Austin, Texas. They used the Hubble Space Telescope to get an image of a grouping of five galaxies located a mind-boggling 13.1 billion light-years away. The Hubble telescope is seeing that galaxy cluster as it looked just 600 million years after the Big Bang. The astronomers said they presume it has now developed into a supercluster, like the relatively nearby Virgo cluster, which contains more than 2,000 galaxies.
An FBI-FDA sting operation targeting unscrupulous business practices in the emerging stem cell therapy market resulted in the arrest of three U.S. citizens in the last days of 2011 and early 2012. The individuals are being charged with participating in a scheme to manufacture, distribute, and sell to the public stem cells and stem cell procedures that were not approved by the FDA. The arrests, in what investigators said was a $1.5 million illegal scheme to market and sell stem cell treatments to patients with terminal diseases, marks another step in the emergence of the controversial stem cell therapies market. I'm Emily Howard.
And I'm Michael Brennan. We've got science interviews coming up next, but first, this week's Song of the Week. It's by Dana Falconberry off her brand new EP, Though I Didn't Call, It Came. This song is called Petoskey Stone.
However far I roam,
wishes with both hands. Ah, 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 my shade, I'll hope I've made a faint impression in the sand. Ah, ah, ah.
We're Earth Sky. We interview the world's top scientists. Dark matter is a mystery of science. Stars at the outskirts of spiral galaxies orbit much faster than the laws of physics predict. Some unseen mass must be there, say scientists, a halo surrounding a spiral galaxy like our Milky Way, and they call that dark matter. Astrophysicist Sukanya Chakrabarty of Florida Atlantic University has developed a new way to map dark matter, looking at the ripples made by this dark matter in the outer gas disks of spiral galaxies. Dr. Chakrabarty explained her findings in this interview at the 219th meeting of the American Astronomical Society in Austin, Texas. Dr. Chakrabarty, welcome.
Thank you.
So tell us about the results of your study that looked at mapping dark matter in nearby spiral galaxies. What did you find out?
What I found in this study is that the ripples in the outer gas disks of galaxies act as a mirror of the depth of the dark matter potential well. So if the potential well is very steep, the kind of disturbances that form in the outer gas disk are very tightly wrapped. If the potential well is very shallow, the disturbances that form are more loosely wrapped. So by looking at the kind of structures that form in the outer gas disks of galaxies, we can get a handle on the underlying dark matter density distribution. So basically, the observational result that I'm analyzing are the atomic hydrogen maps. So these are maps of the cold gas on the outskirts of galaxies. When you're looking at the very outskirts, it's much more likely that the disturbances that you see there are due to some sort of external perturber, like a galactic satellite that's come by and perturbed the surrounding gas distribution, rather than looking at the inner regions, which are much more messy and much more difficult to model computationally.
Okay, so I guess at the outer disk of this nearby galaxy that you looked at, that's where it is interacting with other galaxies, is that right?
Right. So I analyzed specifically the Whirlpool Galaxy. It's also known as M51. It has a very dramatic arm that extends out to very large distances. And that arm is the product of a merger of a tidal interaction with its own satellite. So in an earlier paper, we showed that by looking at the strength of the disturbances, this is work that I presented at last year's WAS press conference. I showed with a number of collaborators that by looking at the strength of the disturbances, we could figure out how massive the dwarf galaxy is that produced the structures that we see in the outer gas disk, and also where it is in radius and azimuth. So in principle, this gives you a means of hunting for dark matter-dominated dwarf galaxies. And this is one of the problems we now face in modern cosmology. There's something called the missing satellites problem, where theorists expected to see many more galactic satellites than are actually observed in the local neighborhood. So we wanted to come up with a method that allows you to find galactic satellites, dark matter-dominated dwarf galaxies, from analysis of their gravitational effects on other bodies without requiring knowledge of their stellar light, because many of these things are very dim. They're very dark matter dominated, so they don't have a lot of optical light. So we wanted to figure out a way of you know, hunting for them without needing to see their stellar light. So this is actually quite similar to the way Neptune was discovered in the 1840s. So in the 1840s, Le Verrier analyzed disturbances in the orbits of Uranus, and he made the hypothesis that they were due to a yet unseen planet. And he was able to figure out the azimuth of that planet, now known as Neptune, to within a degree. So that's the first example of the discovery of an essentially dark object from analysis of its effects, its gravitational effects on another body, and it's in a similar spirit to the work that we're trying to do.
Just to back up a second, please describe for us, what is dark matter?
Right. So one of the most of the mass in galaxies is dark. And this was observationally inferred on galactic scales back in the 70s. So in the 70s, what we found were that when you looked at the rotation curves of galaxies, when you looked at the circular speed in galaxies, it continued to be flat out to large distances. And these distances were large compared to the region where you saw the stars. Okay, and from Newtonian gravity, you expect the circular speed to fall. We had expected the circular speed to fall off at large distances where we didn't see the stars. But it continued to be flat out to very large distances that are, you know, distances that are large compared to the region where we saw emission from the stars. So it was then inferred that there is an unseen dark component that is producing these flat rotation curves. So dark matter is dark because it doesn't emit any electromagnetic radiation, but it is massive. So that means that it will interact gravitationally with whatever else, right? So that's the main thing that we're taking advantage of here. It's the fact that we can study its gravitational signatures on a very highly responsive thing, and that's the cold gas. The cold gas is a great tracer because it's very responsive. So it's basically like, you know, dropping pebbles into a pond and looking at the ripples in the pond and trying to figure out how massive was the pebble. You know, if you sort of understood the physics of that well enough, you might be able to do it, even if you didn't see the pebble fall in.
Tell us about this step towards actually being able to put it on a map and see what it looks like.
So that's exactly what we're trying to, you know, do here, to map it. And by mapping it, you know, that means to figure out, you know, not just it has some total mass, but to figure out, you know, how much of it is in the central regions, how much of it in the outer regions, and so forth, to actually create a map of it, you know, like you were trying to create a map of the world or something like that. So that's the hope, is that we can actually map dark matter by looking at something that we can see, the gas disks, the outer gas disks of galaxies, which are very responsive to gravitational interactions. And if you change the potential depth of the dark matter halo, you see that it's reflected in the structures that form. And in the maps of the gas disk, which we are already have at our disposal.
What's the most important thing you'd like people today to know about investigating dark matter?
Well, I think, you know, the hunt for dark matter, as I said earlier, has a lot in common with the hunt for planets back in the 1800s. So there's a lot of potential to understand dark matter from its effects on other things, from its gravitational effects on other things. I think that's a very promising thing. It's very similar in spirit to the way Neptune was discovered. It's a kind of indirect means of hunting for this thing that we can't see. And if these kind of methods turn out to be successful, it gives us a way of hunting for dim things, kind of like looking for your car in a fog, right? If you kind of know approximately where to look, you're going to do much better than if you have to do a completely blind search. The other thing is, I think, you know, in the next 10 years, we're going to move more and more to studying dark matter and the interplay of dark matter and baryons, the stuff that you see on galactic scales.
You've been listening to astrophysicist Sukanya Chakrabarty. We're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science. Find us as Earth Sky on Facebook, Earth Sky Science on Twitter, and at earthsky.org. Deborah Bird joins us now with news of the global night sky, sky-watching the constellation Orion. Welcome, Deborah.
Hi, Jorge. Well, at this time of year, if you go outside and you look up, first of all, you're going to see a bunch of bright stuff up there because there are some bright stars and some bright planets up right now. But we're going to talk about not a star, not a planet, but a whole constellation. So a whole pattern of stars on the night sky. And that is the most famous constellation of all, the constellation Orion.
It's an awesome sight, and it's an easy constellation to find. And if you're new to sky watching, it's something to look for.
Yeah, if you go outside tonight in the evening and you pick out any pattern of stars in the night sky, chances are that pattern is going to be the constellation Orion. And the reason is that it's just such a distinctive pattern. There's really no other pattern in the night sky that's quite like Orion. So the thing that you can look for that'll tell you that it is Orion is a short, straight row of three medium bright stars. They're not the brightest stars in the sky, they're only medium brightness, but it's very noticeable. A short little row of three medium bright stars, and those stars are the belt of Orion.
So what else is there?
Well, so on either side of that belt, there's a much brighter star. There's a blue-white star called Rigel, and there's a very somber red star called Betelgeuse.
And I understand that these stars in the belt of Orion, this straight row of stars, can help you orient yourself a little bit in the sky.
Right. And as I said earlier, there are so many bright objects up right now. One of those very bright objects is the sky's brightest star, the star Sirius in the constellation Canis Major. Sirius, normally on most evenings at this time of year, you would absolutely just, your eye would go straight to Sirius because it's the brightest thing. But right now there are so many bright planets around that you might not know if you look out in the night sky which one of those is a planet and which one of those is a star. And you can use the constellation Orion to help you identify that star, that brightest star, Sirius.
So how can Orion's belt help us find this star Sirius?
Well, it's just a very cool coincidence of the heavens that Orion's belt actually points to Sirius. So if you find that short straight row of three medium bright stars, Orion's belt, and you look in the direction that belt is pointing, you'll find that in one direction it's pointing to the very bright star, the brightest star in the sky, Sirius, in the constellation Canis Major, sometimes called the Dog Star. And in the other direction, Orion's belt is actually pointing toward another bright star. This is all coincidence, but there you go. The other bright star is Aldebaran in the constellation Taurus the Bull.
Thanks, Deborah.
Thank you, Jorge.
Earth Sky's Deborah Bird, and we're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science. And that's our show. Thank you for joining us. This week's show was recorded at the Earth Sky Studios in Austin, Texas, the live music capital of the world. Our producer is Michael Brennan. Executive producers are Peter Zandan, Ryan Britton, and Deborah Bird. Special thanks this week to our musical contributors, The Black and White Years, Maneja Beto, Dana Falconberry, 100 Flowers, and Sleep Good. For more information on the science and the music you heard this week, visit our website at earthsky.org. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
There are too many artists, too much art, and not enough genius, I believe. Science is the art of the next stage. There are so many artists, too much heart, and not enough reason, I'm afraid. Silence is the song of the next stage. But what we don't know won't hurt us. What we don't know won't hurt us.